This is Hacker Public Radio episode 3323 for Wednesday the 28th of April 2021. Today's show is entitled, The Alternate Internet You Never Knew Existed. It is hosted by Klaatu and is about 29 minutes long and carries a clean flag. The summary is, I changed my DNS server and you won't believe what happened next.
This episode of HPR is brought to you by archive.org. Support universal access to all knowledge by heading over to archive.org/donate.
Hey everybody, this is Klaatu. You're listening to Hacker Public Radio. In this episode, I want to talk about an alternate internet you may not know exists. Or you might. But I'm going to go under the assumption that you don't, and that's what we're going to talk about in this episode. So, funny thing about the internet is that... Oh, by the way, before I start proper, I should mention, yes, there are lots of directions this could go. And I hope that this will be somewhat unique and take you by surprise. So anyway, the funny thing about the internet is that it only works because everyone believes in it. And that's not strictly true. It only works the way that it works because everyone has agreed that when you go onto the internet, you're going to speak a certain technical language. In other words, your computer is going to communicate along certain technical lines. So in other words, when you go onto the internet, you're going to roam around port 80, probably. Mostly. And that's the assumption. When you go onto the internet, you're going to look around this sort of namespace, as it were, this subdomain called www, which is that first part on in a URL, at least traditionally. I mean, it's so common that we frequently drop it. And that's why in the 90s movies that you watch, or the 90s TV shows, or if you go back and watch probably 90s commercials, and probably even early 2000s, or maybe only to early 2000s, I don't know. Old stuff, you'll listen to it, and they'll say things like www.example.com. And you think, why are they saying www all the time? And they got so tedious that people would say things like www, because they didn't want to have to say www. Too many syllables, www. So it was a really, really common thing for a long time. And now we just take it for granted. We just say example.com, knowing that everyone is going to go to www.example.com, because no one would try to go to, I don't know, www.example.com or something weird like that. That would be silly. Everyone knows that internet sites exist on www. So anyway, another thing everyone sort of has agreed on is this assumption that there are... Well, historically, there were, like, I don't know, three what we call top-level domains. That's the letters at the end of the URL, the last stanza of a URL, the .com, the .org, the .gov. I guess there's .net for a while, too. I don't know when that came out. But anyway, there were certain top-level domains that you could have. Now, these days, I think it's relatively widespread knowledge that there's nothing actually magical about .com, .net, .org, .gov. Oh, .edu. How could I forget .edu? So anyway, there's nothing magical about those things. It's just they were there. That's what was being offered. And we'll get into what it means for something to be offered like that. That was what was on offer. And so people used it. They had a menu placed in front of them, and they chose when they were registering their domain, either a .com, a .gov, a .edu, whatever. And this worked, because everyone knew when they typed in a URL into their browser that it had to end in a .com or a .edu or .gov or .whatever. And so everything sort of, things were able to meet, as it were, online. Because if you went to your URL bar and just typed in whatever you want, example.klaatu, then that wasn't going to get you anywhere. But as many hackers are wont to ask, why is that? How did that get established? Where did that come from? Well, I am by no means a historian of things internet. I'm sure there are many listeners on here who could tell a very, very accurate story of how all of this actually came about. For me, I got in pretty late. I do know, however, a little bit about DNS and ICANN. So the ICANN is the name of an organization. It wasn't a statement of what I was prepared to do. So DNS, as you may or may not know, is this system to marry together IP addresses and human-friendly names. It's a simple way for computers to be able to talk in numbers, such as 93.184.216.34, or something like that, and humans to be able to speak with words, such as example.com. That's DNS. It translates one from the other. But in order for DNS to work, there needs to be a master list of what number has been assigned to what name. And in order for that to work, there needs to be some sense of ownership or priority to a name. So you wouldn't want Klaatu claiming example.com was his when Ayanna has already claimed it. That would be problematic. And so there came about a not-for-profit public benefit corporation with participants from all over the world. I'm reading this straight from their website. Dedicated to keeping the internet secure, stable, and interoperable. It promotes competition and develops policy on the internet's unique identifiers. Through its coordination of the internet's naming system, it has an important impact on the expansion and evolution of the internet. So in other words, there's an organization out there called ICANN, I-C-A-N-N, that's Internet Corporation for Assigned Names and Numbers, that keeps track of all the names and the numbers that they're supposed to forward people or computers onto when a name is requested, a domain name is requested of the internet. And you type a name into your browser, somewhere a computer translates that into a number. You don't know it, it's happening. Okay. So that's the structure as it exists. There's ICANN, they take names, they take money, and they assure, because everyone's agreeing that ICANN is the one who manages domain names, they ensure that those domain names are reserved for the people who have paid for them. And this works quite well. It's worked for a long time. You can, and you don't have to be anyone special, as you may or may not know. You can buy a domain name yourself. You can go to anhonesthost.com, anhonesthost.com/domains. Remember, that is getting translated into a special number behind your back, but you'll get there. You'll get to the server, and you can search for a domain name that you want, such as yourgreatdomain.net or example.com. That's not available, but you could search for it. And when you find one that is available, you can reserve it, and an honest host does some kind of registration process with ICANN and make sure that your name and contact information gets entered into the big internet book, and from now on, you have ultimate say over what happens with that domain, what server that gets pointed to. And if you own the server, then you have ultimate say over what displays in people's web browsers when they go there. Now imagine a world where you decided that ICANN wasn't the ultimate authority on that name number conversion process. Imagine a world where someone was keeping an alternate list of different names, special names that aren't reserved by anyone but also aren't available for reservation for anyone, and a different list and their own list of numbers that would then correspond with those names. If that were to exist, then you could, when you go into a web browser, you could tell, you know, your web browser or your computer to skip over the rest of the world's domain name system and instead consult this alternate secret list, and you could go anywhere. Well, anywhere that was populated. So you could get your own domain name, presumably, on this alternate list, and then you would have a website that really, it's out there, it's in the world, it's available for anyone to see, except people wouldn't be able to sort of stumble on it unless they were using this alternate list. So I want to be clear here, this is not a form of, like, encryption, this is not a form of, maybe it's a vague form of obfuscation, but that's not why it's interesting, I don't think, and that's why, that would be a weird way to look at this. This is simply, arguably, a more democratic method of doing DNS, because there would be no money changing hands. It would be driven by volunteers and volunteer organizations. It would be something that was outside of sort of the purview of really an established infrastructure. Well, I say infrastructure. What I mean is an established structure, I guess. Because this is another important point about this. And that is that the internet really, for a moment, we could think of it as two different things. There's the software side, but then there's also the hardware side. And this theoretical alternate list of domain names and numbers, it's all software. So it's out there, it's easy to get, it's open source, it would be super simple to implement and to use. But the hardware, obviously, is it obvious? The hardware is, it still has to exist. In order to, you know, the internet is a huge networking exercise. It has been a global experiment in running a lot of cable. And it has gone really, really well, amazingly, I guess. I mean, I guess it depends on your area. And you might argue that, say, fiber didn't reach your neighborhood quite as quickly as it should have, or maybe reliable internet hasn't reached you at all yet. So maybe it hasn't gone well for you. But I think if you zoom out and look at the whole world, it's been pretty effective, I reckon, and it's continuing. But that infrastructure, that literal infrastructure, belongs to somebody. You know, the wires belong to a company who paid for the wires and then hired people to dig tunnel or dig ditches and put the wires down, or to put them onto telephone poles, or however they're being run. So that stuff would still be a necessity until we reach the point of a global mesh network. We'll still need even then we'll need hardware, but it won't be, you know, we wouldn't need cables, presumably. We could just sort of, it would be a mesh network of like magic Wi-Fi or something. Or maybe not Wi-Fi, maybe it would have to be something else. But point being, the hardware is going to be there, and it's going to be a requirement no matter what in this right now. So I'm speaking exclusively of an alternate internet, unquote, on the software side. And it turns out that such a thing does exist. It's called opennic.org. That is OPENNIC.org, such as Open Network Interface Controller. That's what that would stand for, presumably, opennic.org. You can go there and you'll see that they announce, or they present themselves as an open and democratic alternative DNS route. What this means is that you can tell your computer, or you could do it at your router. We'll get into that in a moment. You can tell your computer to check OpenNIC DNS servers when seeking to translate a name that you give it in the internet browser or in a terminal, whatever you're using. Check that alternate list for name resolution, find a number for that name, and send you there instead. So for instance, you could go to b.libre, b.libre, and there would be a site there. It wouldn't just come up, can't find that site. There would actually be something there. You could go to example.gopher, and there might be a site there. I don't actually know. I didn't check. But you could do that. These things. There would be sites at extension or at top level domains that on paper they don't exist. So how would you go about doing this? Well, it's honestly super simple. That's why I had to pad this episode out with a bunch of history and stuff, because it's if you've ever changed your DNS server ever before, then you're halfway there. Now, if you haven't done that, don't worry. I'm going to kind of address how that would be done. There are a couple of different options, but it is pretty simple. And again, it's not magic. It's simply telling your computer, hey, instead of checking, I don't know, 8.8.8.8 for all of the names and numbers, first go by this server and check it for names and numbers. And if a name and number exists there, that's where I want you to take me. And this can be a little bit tricky with modern software, with modern browsers trying to be sort of more helpful than maybe they ought to be. But OpenNIC has answers for all of these problems. So let's talk about how to do this. So the first way, I guess I'll go local, close to far. So the most localized way to implement this would be to change your DNS server on your computer. And there's a wiki on opennic.org. Go to the wiki. You can find instructions on there how to set your DNS on Mac and Windows. There is, surprisingly, honestly, no entry for Linux yet. I've requested access to the wiki, so we'll see if I can add that soon. But on Linux, there are a couple of different ways to do it. Certainly the traditional way, I guess, would be to look in /etc/resolve.conf. That's /etc/resolve, no E on the resolve, resolv.conf. And there ought to be some name servers listed there. And it's probably a name server given to you by your internet provider or something. Or maybe it could be from your internet provider. It could be from a router that you're interfacing through, your gateway router, essentially. Could be a couple of different things. You can change it, theoretically. You could just change it yourself to one of the OpenNIC DNS servers. So for a name server, rather than having, I don't know, again, 8.8.8.8, let's say, which is a real one. That's like Google's name server. It's a really easy one to remember for pinging tests. Name server, you could enter something different, such as 112.109.84.76. I didn't make that number up. You have to go to opennic.org, scroll down, look down at the bottom of the page, and it will tell you your closest servers, and it lists them right there for you, exactly the closest server that you could use. And you know, geographic location is important, so if you can find the closest one to you, you'll get a better response in theory. So that is something that's worth doing. So you plug one of those numbers into your /etc/resolve.conf, and then you can do things like, I don't know, ping be.libre, and I actually get pings back. And b.libre is just a site that I just randomly, like, that is linked from a couple of the top-level domains, like, .libre, for instance, and .geek.oss. Actually, a lot of these link to Libre, b.libre. Not .oz, though. That one goes to opennic.oz. So anyway, once you change your name server, then your computer's looking at that name server, and so it will be able to map correctly a wacky top level domain like .libre or .oz or .null or .pirate. Those are all valid things because you're looking at that name server. Now, if you were to try to ping one of those servers before entering your name server, then you get an unresolvable. It'll say not recognized or something like that, unknown host. So you don't, and it's important to mention here that you don't lose access to the other internet, like, you know, the one that everyone else is using. You can still ping, for instance, example.com. That resolves. You can ping all the usual websites. It's just you also happen to get all of these other websites that people may not really be aware of. Who knows what you'll find on there? Maybe you'll find the dark web. That'd be exciting. Or the deep web, even. That's even worse, I think. Anyway, so that's the easy way to do it, I guess. It's the traditional way, I should say. There's a more correct way to do it now, and that would be to go through Network Manager, assuming you're running Network Manager, and you probably are. Most distributions these days at least ship with Network Manager, and if you're not using it, then you'll know that you're not using it, and you'll know how to enter DNS probably. In Network Manager, and Network Manager is not always called Network Manager, I guess. I mean, it is. But sometimes the system settings just call it connections, for instance. In KDE5, that's what it calls it. Connections, that's what it says. But it comes up when I type in, like, network. It knows generally the keywords. So you find the place where you configure your internet connections, whether it's your Wi-Fi or your Ethernet or whatever. And somewhere in there, whether you're using KDE or GNOME or something else, somewhere in there there's going to be a place for you to enter a DNS server. This is oftentimes either blank because it's getting it from your router, or it is populated with something from your router. Generally speaking, you can override this. And also generally speaking, if you do that, basically what you're doing is you're entering a number into a configuration. And when Network Manager starts up, it checks that configuration file, sees that there is a DNS server that you want to use. And so it places that number in that same /etc/resolve.conf file for you. So in other words, it's just kind of a more official, or a a less personal way to add a number to /etc/resolve.com if you're going through Network Manager, so that it can do the thing that you were going to do anyway. But that's the way that Network Manager likes to work, and so that's how you can do it. So I went to my wired connection. I'm on Ethernet right now, so wired connection. And in IPv4, that's the tab of my wired connection, there's other DNS servers. I enter my DNS server there. I click apply, and it's configured. I think, not 100% sure, I think I had to kick myself offline and then bring my connection back up for that to kick in. That's my recollection. I think I had trouble initially switching over, but that's pretty easy to do. Okay, so that's two methods. The second method is the quote, correct way to do it. The first method is just kind of the common traditional way of doing it on Linux. It's two methods to get your computer, your Linux computer, to look at the OpenNIC.org DNS, the OpenNIC DNS system. There's a different way, which I can't really go over in quite the same amount of detail, because everyone is going to be a little bit different on this one, but you can also configure this on your router. So if you have access to your router, I mean, if you're living in a place where you don't own your router, you don't have the password, you're not allowed to mess with that, whatever, then this won't work for you, obviously, and that's why you would want to configure this on your computer. But if you own the router at the place where you live or work or whatever, you have access to it, you're able to, you have free reign over that thing, or you've managed to acquire free reign over a router at a place, maybe at a cafe or something, or anywhere really, you've acquired access to the router, you feel confident that you can change the numbers on that router, then you can just change the master DNS entry of your access point. So that's in a, you know, all the routers out there have different sort of interfaces, so it's kind of difficult usually to describe how to get there exactly, but certainly on the router that I just purchased, it's in the internet. Well, it's in the advanced tab, and then you go to the internet, and then that's a drop-down menu, and then there's an entry that says DNS or domains or something like that. I don't know, something that was obvious. Actually, I'm lying. The router I just bought, actually the entry is in the internet section, and I do not have an easy way to change that, because the connection to my ISP requires very specific settings. Like, it's very, very strict on, because I'm not using the ISP's router, so I had to get a router that would work with this ISP. And so, yeah, there are some settings in there that I am very hesitant to try to change and to override. So ultimately, I did not configure it on the router, but that's where you would do it. There's an entry usually on DNS, under DNS, you know, in the internet section or the DNS domain section or whatever it is on your router, and you can put in usually a couple of different name servers. And like I say, you'll likely want to place the OpenNIC DNS at the top of the list. You want that to be your priority domain name server. You may even want to use exclusively OpenNIC DNS. It's up to you. Once you do that on your router, you can save your settings, let it flash its firmware or whatever process it needs to do, and you should be good to go on any computer on that network. So that's kind of nice. Using that method gives you access to the OpenNIC system on everything. Nothing needs to be aware that it's using OpenNIC DNS, because the router is just handing it a number. It's getting put into resolve.conf for the equivalent file on whatever OS the device is using, and everything just kind of works magically. Well, I say magically, but actually there's a slight problem. So in the terminal, everything just works magically. It's great. You can browse around in a terminal, you can ping things, you can wget things, you can curl things. Everything just works. It's great. In a graphical browser, whether you're talking about Firefox, Chromium, or Chrome, those are the only three I tested, this sometimes has a little bit of a speed bump, let's call it, and that is that the browser attempts to correct what it sees as, well, nonsense domain names, really. It doesn't understand what you're trying to tell it to do. So, for instance, if I open up, well, actually, I can't emulate it right now on Firefox because I fixed it. I did the thing. But I can emulate it on, for instance, Chromium. And so if I go to opennic.oz, which is a OpenNIC space. Oh, that works because I've been there before on Chromium. All right, what if I go to grep.geek? Yeah, there's a failure. Okay, so Chromium in this case, but it, like I say, it happens on Chrome, usually happens on Firefox. The browser itself intercepts your query or your navigation and asks, or it takes you to a search page. Whatever your search engine is, opens that up and suggests sites. And none of these are grep.geek because according, you know, this search engine doesn't know about OpenNIC. It doesn't understand OpenNIC top-level domains. So it can't help you with that. Now, fortunately, at the top of the browser, there's this little message that says, did you mean to go to http://grep.geek? And if you click on that link, then it takes you to grep.geek. I'm going to do one experiment real quick. If I enter http://grep.geek myself, then it seems to take me there without questioning my choice. But without the HTTP, it fails to work. I thought I'd tried that some time ago before trying this other method that I'm about to say, and it didn't work. So I wouldn't necessarily count on that. And either way, it's not necessarily the most convenient thing in the world. But if you go to open, to always type http://, you feel like you're, you know, in those 90s commercials or whatever, in the 90s movies. What you can do, though, is you can go to opennic.org. Here it is, opennic.org. And go to, I think, find out more. That's the big, well, currently, at the time of this recording, that's the big button, big blue button on the front of their page, right next to Discover Sites, which we'll get to in a moment. Find out more, and along the, in this text, there are some browser add-ons. And these browser add-ons, they distribute them for both Chrome and Firefox. They can intercept your browser's interception of your URLs and stop the questioning. It'll add this to your browser, and or rather it will remove that capability of your browser. It'll just take you straight to those domains. Now, even if you don't do a browser add-on, which isn't really necessary, I went without it for ages, been playing around with it lately, but I don't know if I'll keep it installed, to be honest, because it's really not that big of a deal to just either type in the http://, or suffer through the first time of going to a site being questioned by your browser about that, confirming that that's where you want to go, and then ending up there. And then from then on, your browser won't ask. It kind of like, it caches it, I guess, and recognizes it as a valid address. So it's not the worst thing in the world. You can do this on mobile as well. OpenNIC.org distributes, or it makes available some both Android and iOS DNS wizards to help you configure your mobile device to be able to use OpenNIC DNS, and then you're up and running on all of your devices. What more could you want? So yeah, that's the other internet that's out there. It's a thing that you'll have to discover. There's a whole side of the internet that isn't within the, I don't know, 50 or 60 or 100 top level domains that we have now, but they're out there. You just have to know where to look to get their home address, as it were. So check that out, opennic.org. It's a lot of fun. It's a brave new world. And you can, of course, register a domain there for free. You just lay a claim on it, and then you have it for a while. You have to re-register pretty frequently to keep hold of it, but that's just part of the deal. You just do that frequently, and then you've got the domain, and you can put websites on that domain, or you can point that domain at websites, I should say, and have your own internet site on the other internet that most people don't really know about. What's the use of that? I don't know. Sometimes these things you just do because you can. OpenNIC.org. Enjoy.
You've been listening to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.org. We are a community podcast network that releases shows every weekday, Monday through Friday. Today's show, like all our shows, was contributed by an HPR listener like yourself. If you ever thought of recording a podcast, then click on our contribute link to find out how easy it really is. Hacker Public Radio was founded by the Digital Dog Pound and the Infonomicon Computer Club and is part of the Binary Revolution at binrev.com. If you have comments on today's show, please email the host directly, leave a comment on the website, or record a follow-up episode yourself. Unless otherwise stated, today's show is released under a Creative Commons Attribution ShareAlike 3.0 license.